Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. We have a really lovely guest today.
We have Orlando Lima on the show. He's a great stand-up, has an amazing special called Adorable on HBO Max. Just an all-around great person to have on the show. Just wonderful energy.
Yes.
Keeps it positive. I would say we're a lot happier after doing this interview.
Yes, 100%. He is a ray of sunshine, and all of you are going to feel really good after this, too. I just know it because he's the best.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna, my love. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good. How are you?
It's okay. I have some family things that are making me really stressed.
Classic family.
Like, I feel so strange when, like, you're going through a rough time, especially when in regards to COVID or something.
Yeah.
I don't know what exactly to share on, like, social media or even on this podcast because it feels so personal and I don't know. There's something that happened in 2020 where I don't feel the impulse to share everything at all. But
that's fine.
I'm not great. I'm not terrible, but just hoping for the best for certain family members of mine because they're kind of sick.
That's not good. But you don't have to share anything you don't want to. I didn't share when my parents had COVID because I was like, I just need to pay attention to what's going on and hope they get better.
Exactly. It's hard not to think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. But all you can do is just send them good energy or something and keep them in your thoughts and call them when you can. Or
as my mom would say, pray for them.
Exactly. And if I am, maybe I should start doing that. Maybe I'm the reason this is all happening.
No.
Everything's
what?
About me.
That's
I'm the reason
crazy.
COVID
no.
came into. I'm kidding.
That's you would find a way to
main
blame yourself.
Yeah. I'm the main character of this apocalypse, everybody.
Naturally. Well, we have a fun episode today. We have a guest who I met when they did the Daily Zeitgeist, and previous to that, we hadn't met, but their person, representative, representative always sounds so weird. I was introduced to them by the person who, I guess, represents them on booking podcasts. This is a terrible intro. I am so sorry. But anyway, we have a comedian, you know, a stand-up who has a special on HBO called or HBO Max, excuse me, I forgot they've been upgraded, called Adorable. Again, you heard him on Daily Zeitgeist. He's hilarious. I remember he was practicing cursive, if I recall correctly. His name is Orlando Lima.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
This is my first time talking to you, but before we even hit record, we got to know you pretty well. We were playing with the video filters on Zoom. You're already a delight, and I'm very much looking forward to talking to you.
Oh, thank you, Shireen. Right? I got it right, Shireen.
Yep, 100%.
Nice. And Anna, these are my peoples now. I'm hanging out with you guys, and we're here, and we're present, and we're with each other. And right now, we're going to do one of my favorite things that I like to do and force everybody in these podcasts that invite me on. I like to force them to tell me a good thing that happened to them today. What good thing happened to you? I'll start it off. Last night, my beautiful Nina, which is my puppy, my rat terrier, she's an older dog.
Yeah.
And it was kind of dark and her eyesight isn't that well. And she fell down, I would say, about probably like 6 steps from our bed. Our bedrooms are upstairs. Mm-hmm. And she was going up to the bedroom to the second story, and she fell down about 6 steps. And I was so worried. And I babied her last night. And today she woke up and she did her little yoga stretches, and she was fine. And I was happy, and the sun was shining. So, a good thing that happened today, my dog took a bad spill last night, and she woke up just fine today.
Oh, that's
I'm so
nice.
Glad I'm to glad. Hear that.
Yeah.
Nina's okay.
Okay, yeah. Now we throw it on it. Let's go.
This robe that my mom got me arrived today. My mom is trying to get me to wear more robes, and she found me this really beautiful one, and she sent me the robe, and it came there today. And when I put it on, I was like, this is a nice robe. I think I'm going to start wearing a robe.
That's is nice. Was it weighted? Did it have some weight to it?
Not really. It's very lightweight, actually. It's just nice. It's soft.
What are we talking about? We're talking satin or we're talking cotton?
Yeah, that was my question. Like, I love robes. Like, I have, like, I love a fuzzy robe, though. I'm not, like, a big, like, flowy robe person. Like, what kind of robe is this?
It feels like kind of like a microfiber of some sort. It's really, really soft, very lightweight. I don't know. I need to go look at what it's made out of, but it's not exactly silk or satin, if you will. It's definitely not silk. My mom wouldn't buy me a silk robe. She's not going to spend that money on me. But I think it's like a microfiber mix of like that and maybe some polyester. It's just a very soft.
It felt great. It just felt great when you put it on.
Yes, it did.
And you know why? Not only because of the material, but because it came to your house. And your mom's love was attached to it because she took the time to mail you that. That's great. I'm so happy for you. Awesome. I love a good robe. I have a silk one. Ooh. And every once in a while, you know, I feel like I should be smoking a cigarette. But I don't because I don't smoke. But I walk around the house in the robe and I have my PJs under. I have a full PJ set. I think I'm a 65-year-old man. But I'm only in my 40s. But I've always been an older human being in my brain. And now we go to Shireen. Let's go. What's the good vibe for today?
I don't know if I can top getting a robe in the mail. I mean,
sure you
I
can.
I love a soft anything. I'm a big sucker for like soft blankets, soft clothing, soft robes. My mom, she literally only gets things that are soft, and she takes tags off of everything just to make sure nothing, and like puts shirts inside out sometimes when she's at home so the seams don't touch her, you know, like she's one of those like very like
she's sensitive to uncomfortable clothes,
exactly. So all of her things are very soft. Oh, I miss my mom. But I guess it didn't happen to me, but I am proud of myself because I woke up today and I did yoga for 30 minutes, and I've been trying to do that. I did it every day, not to like be annoying because it's annoying to say it out loud, but I'm very proud of myself because every day in January I did yoga for at least 20 to 30 minutes, sometimes more.
So you set a goal in January and you achieved it for however long it was. You got up every day and you did it. And then today you did it, even though there were some gray clouds coming in the distance. I've heard the top of the show when you were talking about your parents. You still managed to gather the energy and you leaned into the positive of moving forward and doing your yoga today. And that's awesome. I'm happy for you.
Thanks.
And I'll say it for you guys. I'll keep your parents in my prayers. And later on, I'll ask you for their names because one of the most beautiful things about praying, and I got this from Mr. Rogers, is I didn't know how powerful it was to pray, but to actually say the person's full name.
Oh, interesting.
You know, there's a different vibe to it. There's a different energy. You're like, oh, this is official. This isn't just the facts. I put a cover letter on this fax.
Yeah.
You know?
I really do appreciate that. And I do want you to keep my parents in your thoughts. The person I'm most worried about right now is my uncle, actually, and his family. Okay. They live
We're on it. We're on the job.
It's a family of four, and they're all struggling.
And we're on the job.
I'm going to just give you a list of names after this so you can just pray for each one. It's about six or so, maybe more, depending. Yeah.
100%. We're on it. We're on it. And it's going to be good. I'm not a religious guy. I'm a spiritual guy.
Yeah.
I like that. All religion should be spiritual and individual, but I think it's been twisted.
Yes. Yes. So let's move on. Now that I hijacked your show, and I'm happy to hand it back.
I would love you to keep it. Keep it.
Yeah, I just like to do this because we get caught up sometimes and we are moving so fast. And I love to just step on the brake a little bit and just enjoy ourselves. And just the way that even your energy, you said it earlier, I came on and I was trying on filters and you guys both just hopped in with no hesitation. You were like, oh yeah, let's do this. Without asking, like, oh, I'm gonna try this too. You just didn't even say it, which is fantastic. You guys get it.
You got it.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Someone's playing with filters. Of course I'm gonna hop right in.
You're right. I think taking a moment to take a breath and like be like, what good happened to me today? I think doing that every day, multiple times a day, is a good thing. And it's a good reminder. Like, I have this tendency to, like, whether it's this podcast or anything else, I jump on and I'm like, get to business. Like, let's do this. Like, are you recording? Yeah. Let's go. Mm-hmm. But I think I appreciate that you were like, let's just start by taking a breath, being grateful, and reminding yourself that, like, it's life and you should appreciate it.
That's the main lesson during these times. Two great things have happened during this time. One is I discovered that I still like my wife. That's fantastic.
Of course.
Okay? That's awesome.
Sorry.
That's the perfect combination. No, that's actually funny. I know it's funny. But it's also true. You know, because you can love someone and not like them. And just her boss was like, you can work from home. And now she's home all the time. And I'm home all the time because I'm a stand-up. And to look at this woman and be like, oh, I still like her. Because 10 hours of the day, she was gone. She was at her job. And now she's here with me and we eat breakfast together. And we lunch together and we eat dinner together. And it's going to be hard to get back on the road once everything opens up. But that was it. So that was number one, discovering that I still like my wife and we still have that perfect balance of what I think a relationship should be for me is a perfect combination and a perfect balance of like and love. You can love someone and not like them. We have relatives that we love and we don't like. We don't even call them. But when you love and like someone, that's, to me personally, my opinion, the perfect balance of a relationship. And the second thing that I learned was, okay, let's take a beat. And that's what I'm doing. That's why I wanna be here with you guys. I'm not just here just because I have an album and stuff. And you guys are so gracious to have me on because my reps reached out to you guys. But the reality is that I'm happy to be here and I wanna be here. And I'm choosing to be here and I wanna know all about the both of you.
Well, we want to know all about you, which is why when your reps emailed me, I was like, hell yeah, get Orlando. I immediately was like, are you kidding? I would love to have Orlando on the show. And we hadn't known each other before Daily Zeitgeist, but I enjoyed you on that show so much. Like maybe one of my favorite guests during the pandemic, that first time guest that we hadn't had you on before. We hadn't met in person. So
No.
It was, I just think you have such great energy. Like I feel like you make me happy when I just listen to you. Yes. I just can listen to you talk forever. I'm like, oh, he's got a point there. Gotta listen to Orlando.
Thank you. I got such great feedback from doing that podcast. And I'm not this guy, guys. I'm not the doing a lot of podcasts guys. You know, I remember when my team was like, hey, and we're gonna get you on some, I was just like, but this is the growth. This is what pandemic has done for me. This is why I give thanks for this. But you guys were so gracious on that podcast. And the feedback all came back from the same thing that you enjoyed, Anna, which is me learning how to write cursive.
Yeah.
Again, I was like, how do you, I forgot. I think it was a G or something like that, that I had no clue. And I had to Google, how do you do a cursive G?
Yeah,
it's confusing.
But I knew this. I knew how to do this.
Yeah.
Listening to you talk just makes me feel at peace and good.
Oh, thank you.
Good. You have the great energy, man.
You have that. You guys are doing that too. You have great energy. I'm telling you, you won me over the minute that you jumped into the filters with me.
Well, okay. Anna's right. We do want to get to know you, though. This is all right. I feel great, though.
Yes.
Tell the audience, if they don't know, where are you from? Where did you grow up?
Born in Puerto Rico. Both of my parents are Dominican, from the Dominican Republic, also known as Hispaniola to the real geography nerds. Is the country right? It's an island that is part Dominican Republic and the other side is Haiti. At a very young age, my mom went back because of legal reasons to the Dominican Republic. So part of my childhood was, even though I was a U.S. citizen, I grew up in the Dominican Republic. So mm-hmm. I had that and a very humble upbringing, and then moved over to the States by the time that I was 7 years old. And I've been blessed ever since. I think I've been blessed since I was born. What am I talking about?
What led your parents to Puerto Rico?
It was like jumping over. It's the equivalent of like Cubans going over to Miami, Florida.
Okay.
It's, you know, Puerto Rico is like, it's, I believe it's probably like a 30-minute flight.
Okay.
In total, you know, you can cross over illegally by boat. And my mom made, she made one of those sacrifices where she risked her life to get her family a better life. And I just so happened to be in her belly, and I was born in Puerto Rico. So I was a U.S. citizen, but then she wasn't, so she had to go back. She went back, and then part of my childhood was there in the Dominican Republic, which I loved. We didn't have a lot, but there was a lot of love for me, but there wasn't really electricity, wasn't a constant. Mm-hmm. Water, running water wasn't a constant. It was sporadic. And every once in a while, what happened to me as a child was that I had to fly to the United States because it would cost money to keep me in the Dominican Republic, because I wasn't a Dominican Republic citizen. I would have to pay taxes to the country for being there.
Wow.
So that it was cheaper to buy me a plane ticket and fly me out. And then I would go stay with like aunts and uncles in the stateside in New York or Puerto Rico. And then I would fly back to DR and be with my mom. And then, you know, finally my mom got her situation fixed and she moved over to the States and I came with her.
Why do you have to pay taxes? Well, actually, that makes sense, because when I go to Iran, sometimes when I leave, you have to pay like a tourism tax on your way out.
So that's exactly what it is. I've told this story a couple of times, and you just fixed that part of the story to clarify to people. It's like a tourism tax.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even though I'm not a citizen, and back then they didn't have like dual residency.
Yeah.
So technically now, because my parents are Dominican, I can actually go to the Dominican embassy and ask for like a Dominican passport and be named like a Dominican citizen. So when I'm there, I don't have to pay a tourism tax.
Yeah. So many countries do that. They really like to distinguish, like, you're not one of us. Like Dubai, for example, you're not even able to ever be a citizen. Like there's no such thing as a, like, you can't become a Dubai citizen.
But isn't Dubai like made up? Didn't they just grab
it's all a bunch of bullshit.
Didn't they just bring ships with sand and just fill it in?
And then on the flip side, Syria, I have dual citizenship in Syria. And once you're a citizen of Syria, you are a citizen for life. Like that passport can expire or whatever. It's still tied to me.
Nice.
So it's just weird how some countries, I mean, Syria's government is completely
corrupt.
Well,
even the U.S., all my buddies that are these talented individuals and have TV shows and have talk shows, and they're not U.S. citizens, their taxes are completely different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I had their same position, I would pay way less than they do. And it's interesting. It's interesting. Everybody has their thing. Every country has their little thing.
Yeah.
So then that's it. So then I moved and I was raised for most of my life in Miami, Florida. I'm a Dade County 305 till I die. That's part of what you got to say when you say you're from Miami. And I was raised there. I worked as a satellite engineer for CBS News. I also worked for Hewlett Packard throwing out trash. Where else did I work? I worked for the power company. I had so many jobs.
I want to hear all about these jobs, but first, let's take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. And we're back with Orlando. I'm realizing now that your name is Orlando and you're talking about Miami, Florida, which is so obtuse of me because your name was that before you went to Florida. But tell us, so you mentioned all these odd jobs that you had in Florida and Miami.
Yes.
How old are you when you started to work?
My first job was at 8 years old.
Wow.
I worked in an apartment. I lived in an apartment complex in Florida, but it was a lot of buildings. And I went to the office, the leasing office, and they needed to get out information to all the tenants. So they printed up these flyers, papers, and I went through, I can't tell you the number of units, but I went individually to every unit and taped like the paper to their door.
Yeah.
And I was like 8 years old.
Wow.
And that was my first job. And then I washed cars. And then washed cars, passed out flyers. And then like my first, so that was all like kid type of jobs. Money under the table. Then my first official job was at Taco Bell. I loved it. Yes. And then I did a summer with my brother Al at the construction company that he worked at, fabricating metal studs. I really disliked that job. But it was like during the summer. I'm still in school. And then Taco Bell was all through my high school years. Like my whole high school. Then after that, I end up at Hewlett Packard just throwing away trash from the assembly line.
That's after high school?
That's after high school, yes. Yeah. I'm going to college like part time. Me and my best friend Mo, we end up working for this job agency. We sign up with this job agency and they send us to Hewlett Packard. And they put us to work in our job is to go to every assembly line and they would throw out all this cardboard. And our job was to pick up this cardboard and take it back to the trash compactors. And then the whole trash compactor area, we built like a fort back there. We're dummies. We're just young dummies. We built a fort and I had so much fun in that gig. From there, I worked to like an expanded plastic company. From expanded plastic, I had the blessing to work for a cigar company called Miami Prestige Cigars. And the guy at Prestige Cigars actually invented what would be the blunt wrap. So when you go to like a bodega or a drugstore, those homogenized papers that you can put your herbal essence inside of it and smoke it, which was the idea from cracking a Philly blunt. Not that I'm a smoker or whatnot. I actually don't participate in anything that doesn't let me be in control of my mind. So I did that. Then I worked as also did club promotions at night, passing out flyers.
So you said you were in college part-time?
Yeah.
What were you studying or like what did you want to study?
I was studying communications and I would go sign up for a semester, then do the semester, then come back for the next semester. And I would be like, nah, I'm not going to do it this semester. I'll skip this semester. I was never a school guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was doing it more for my parents.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I was a hard worker and I figured that people will always see my hard work. I would just put my head down and everything. Fast forward, I end up working as a security guard. I end up working at Florida Power and Light, where I read meters and I walk in people's backyards and I'm reading people's meters. And then finally, my final job, my good friend Leon Gonzalez, I thank him to this day. He said, listen, there's this live truck operating position at CBS News. Would you like to come in for it? It doesn't pay much, but it's like an entry level. I got there. It's news. So I guess subconsciously, I always love entertainment. So I loved it. So it was still during this time where you could come into work on your days off. And even though you weren't getting paid, they would let you be there. So I started coming in on my days off and learning everything. And there I learned how to be a camera operator, how to edit nonlinear and linear, how to fly in the helicopter and do like a high-speed chase.
What? That's cool.
That's really cool.
I learned how to shoot, like I said, like a cameraman out in the field, 15 minutes. Clips, 15-minute wide, 15-minute medium, 15-minute tight. There, with those 15 minutes, you could cut a story. If the person's hands are shaking, zoom in on their hands. If they're shaking, if they're crying, focus on the crying. And you could do your edits like that, and you'll have a wonderful package. I chase hurricanes. The guy that ran the satellite truck passed away in a motorcycle accident. And instead of them hiring someone that had a lot of experience, they looked towards me and they were like, Orlando, do you think you could figure out the SAT truck? And I said, give me a week, I'll figure it out. And within a week, I knew how to grab the satellite. Now it's even easier because now, so you got the birds up in the sky, which is a reference to the satellites. And every satellite is in the sky at a certain latitude and longitude, all that stuff. All these numbers. Now you just dial in the numbers and the dish will move. Back in the day, when I started, you have to find the satellite and it was like a footprint, which was like, it's the equivalent to make it simple for the listeners, is the equivalent of looking at a sound wave. So you would have to identify like Galaxy 16. Oh, the sound waves are very aggressive, and then in the middle it looks like the Twin Towers in New York City, and that's how you were able to eye it and figure out that you were on the right bird. So I would do that, and then that translated into me chasing hurricanes, that translated into me getting cleared by the White House, so when Air Force One would land in South Florida, I would be able to go into Miami International Airport, park my truck, run the cables and plug in a camera and catch that wave of the president getting off of Air Force One. And he does his little wave. I got to do that for George Bush. I got to do that for Obama. You know, I got to Obama, his first campaign, like before he was president, when he was running for the first time, I got to cover that whole campaign every time he would come down to Florida.
Wow. You know? Wow. How long did you do this for?
I probably did it, I want to say 6 years.
Wow.
I want to say. Thank you.
All right. I'm curious, like at what, I mean, you're getting all this experience, all this life experience. You're also working in production. Like, at what point did you start to realize you wanted to do comedy or work in the industry?
I was a funny kid.
Yeah.
And I was a funny adult. So even in the darkest, in news, you become jaded, like horrible things happen and you cover them and you're like, oh, you just shake it off, but it's still affecting you as a human being. It's just doing it subconsciously. It's burrowing in, you know, stuff with kids, stuff with the domestic violence, even though we never, all news medias try to never cover a suicide, you still show up. But you don't cover it.
Yeah.
In the sense, the minute that it gets labeled a suicide, that story gets pulled. Because that's one of still like one of the ethical things that news try to do. Like, oh, we're not going to cover that unless it's like a real famous character, you know? And I was doing all that subconsciously, Anna. I believe that I've always wanted to be an entertainer. And that's why being in news, to a certain degree, fed my spirit. Mm-hmm. So I was comfortable. I was happy. I was always happy to show up to work. Working at CBS News was not a job to me. It was fun. It was my playground. But it was subconsciously, now that I'm older, subconsciously I was giving myself a little micro dose of what I really wanted. My wife got to see that in me. I turned 32. She gives me a birthday present with lessons to go to improv at Just the Funny on Coral Way. Just the Funny training for to do improv acting. So I'm there with a group of people and we're doing sketches and whatnot. And then I did that for a minute. And then I went to an open mic. I saw Kyle Grooms in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club. I saw him perform. Kyle Grooms, he was on the Chappelle Show, but also has a background in working in news. So something like everything kind of like clicked there. And I said, well, I want to try this. And she was very supportive. And I called down to the Miami Improv. They explained to me how the open mic works. You come in, you do, we give you 5 minutes, but you have to bring in at least like five people. So it's kind of like you bring in people, they don't pay, but their bill is going to be expensive because they're going to get the nachos, they're going to get the beer and whatnot. Yeah. And I did that and that was it. I was in love.
Nice. That was it. That's a good thing your wife was like, just go do it.
Yes, she's a wonderful human being. She also comes, my wife does, she works in production. She, right now, she does castings for like commercials, but everything is audio. In South Florida, she was like top three people when you have a project that you would call.
Yeah.
It would be, my wife was one of the top three producers that these big agencies would call because she's so good at it and she understands the how the entertainer's mind. She knows how to speak it because she also did like background singing and she sang on TV shows and she auditioned for Bad Boys Making of the Band way back in the day.
Oh, nice.
So, and she has a wonderful spirit. She has a nurturing spirit.
How, that's amazing. I'm curious, how did you guys meet?
We both, one of my many jobs, when I worked at Prestige, the cigar company, was also in the same building as a recording studio. And then I got a job at a recording studio cleaning up, making some extra cash and helping out my buddies who were rappers. And I was just like, man, I'm gonna get a job at this studio so then we could get free studio time for the SoFla Kings. I remember that. And she also, she worked at a studio there and we met there. And it was originally, we were friends. We would take breaks together and we would eat strawberry ice cream by the back. It was at 555 Venetian and on the Venetian Causeway, which was beautiful because you would go to the back of the building was a dock for these real expensive yachts. And we would just sit at the dock and like share a pint of strawberry ice cream every once in a while. And we were just like unplugged from whatever the day was there. And then every once in a while, she would come over to my apartment and we would watch a movie together and we would watch the movie in pure silence. We didn't have to, we felt so comfortable that we didn't have to say anything.
Nice.
And then that grew into, after months of that grew into, oh, wow, like, oh, I like her. And then that like grew into, I love her. And then we had the balance. And then it's a total of 13 years married.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you still like her, that you realized recently.
Yeah. 100%.
Amazing.
100%.
Okay, so how did your parents feel about you getting into comedy? Did they have any thoughts on it or?
I'm the weird one. My father isn't really in the picture, but my mother gave birth to four boys. Out of the four boys, there's only two of us left. Two of them passed away, one from diabetes, one from his immune system. My baby brother's immune system didn't develop. And they passed away. And while they were here with us, they made us laugh. And these are the memories that I choose to focus on, the laughing memories. Anyway, I was the weird one. My brothers were also hard workers, the older ones. Well, my brother Gabby's still a very hard worker. He's like, he's in his 50s, mid-50s, and the guy still maintains two jobs. He doesn't believe in having one job. And it's also a very funny human being. My mother, a funny human being, hardworking lady, strong lady, will never let a man tell her what to do or what not to do. And a long way of saying very supportive, excited for me. She thinks I'm special.
Nice. You are special.
Yeah.
You are.
I love that.
That's very nice. I mean, sounds like an amazing woman. So, okay. So after you take these classes, like, what are your next steps to try and like do stand up professionally? Did you start doing open mics? Like, how did you move from like improv to doing stand up?
I did improv and then I did the open mic. And then I said, okay, 100%, I'm good at this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this. I like this. Not I'm good at this. I like this. I want to do this. Just this. I don't want to do, I'm not a good multitasker.
Yeah.
Let me do this. I start doing this. I start doing the stand-up comedy. I start going in Wednesday nights. I'm more of a mature guy. So like club managers and staff like me because I'm respectful. Nothing is owed to me. I just come in and like whatever. So right away, the club owners were like, hey, listen, Orlando, like, you're cool, man. If you want any show that's happening here, you can come in for free by yourself, obviously, and just hang out in the back of the room and watch the show. So I took advantage of that because I only live like probably like a mile and a half from the Miami Improv. Did that. Started doing it, kept on being respectful. As a comic, I got surrounded by comics that were better than me. Again, because I was so respectful and I appreciated it. Good people like Forrest Shaw, Dave Williamson, John Wynn. You might not know these people, but they have specials out. They all have specials out. You could just Google them. They brought me into their circle, and these were the older comics. So right away, even though it's my first 3 years in comedy, which I'm still technically in comedy, I'm a baby. But remember, I started at 32. These guys brought me in and I'm not hanging out with the 18 and 21 year olds. Nothing's wrong with them, but it's basically, dude, I have a house, a front yard, backyard, a wife and dogs.
Yeah.
So like our mentality isn't the same. My respect right away and my sense of humor granted me the opportunity to host. And from hosting, I met great dudes like Michael Yo, Bruce, Sebastian Maniscalco, and more comics, Tony Woods. And they all enjoyed me because when I worked with them, I would go into the green room and I was like, hey, nice to meet you. Is there anything anything in particular you want me to say? And they would tell me if they had some type of special request, and then I would leave them alone. And usually by the third night, I was welcomed into the green room, meaning I never forced myself on them.
Yeah,
I never or started asking questions. How's the road? And what's the worst condo you ever stayed at? And what? What's the worst set? Do you get heckled every once in a while? I never did that. It was just kind of like, just be cool, be kind, don't be weird.
Yeah.
I applied that to everything.
Yeah. I think that's good advice because I think it's also a little bit like transparent when sometimes people like are really trying to schmooze, you know, they're like maybe trying to, there's like an ulterior desire there or something. But that's amazing. I'm glad you had that support and we want to hear all about your special. But before we do that, let's take our last break. We'll be right back. We're back. So You mentioned you're a comedy baby. And with that in mind, you having the special on HBO Max, that's a huge deal. Mm-hmm. It's called Adorable, again, by the way, to the audience. But tell us about how this special came to be and what the process was like making it.
Yeah. Well, I referred to myself as a comedy baby when I was, that was 3 years in. Now I'm 10 years in. And the HBO special.
I misunderstood. Yeah. I think the present tense was tripping me up.
It's probably me. So, I talk a lot. I get it.
No, I apologize. Yeah. You're not a comedy baby anymore, Orlando. You're farther.
No. I'm not even taking it that way. I just wanted to.
No, it is good to clarify. Yeah. It was my fault. Yeah, I just didn't want
your listeners to be like, wow, he's only been doing it for 3 years. No. I've been doing it for 10 years.
It's good to clarify. I was also confused. Yes. So,
been doing it for 10 years. There's a great comic by the name of Ida Rodriguez. She champions for me a lot. She's been on everything.
Right. She's great.
Yes. I consider her not only a wonderful human being, but like a family member that exists in this world that I didn't know that I had. And so Ida is doing an HBO 15 minutes with a company called Entrenos, which is a wonderful company. I know I sound like I'm being very positive, but you have to understand all these moments in my life have been very positive moments. Ida's doing hers. It's kind of more like a showcase type of presentation for HBO Latino. They give me, Edwin Licona grants me 5 minutes in the front, meaning I come out, I do 5 minutes, they're going to tape it, it's going to air on HBO Latino.
Yeah.
By the way, a lot of people were like, but dude, your comedy's in English. Why are you doing HBO Latino? And I said, because it's the opportunity that has been granted to me.
Yeah.
But they hadn't, what I had noticed was that another great comedian by the name of Vladimir Camacho had done the same thing. And I noticed back then it was called HBO Now, that after it aired on HBO Latino, it automatically got uploaded by midnight. Meaning it aired at midnight, it aired on a particular day, and at midnight that night it uploaded into HBO Now. So it was like, oh, it's HBO Latino, but it's still gonna go up in HBO Now.
Yeah, and it's available.
Vladimir Camacho, a comedian that I know, is right next to the carousel, right next to Game of Thrones. Oh, I saw that. I was like, oh, this is tangible. Anyway, I do the 5 minutes. That's all that I do.
Yeah.
I give them my best 5 minutes. I don't hold back. I don't wait. I'm going to save this material for the time that, for when I have an hour. I give them the 5 minutes. Ida's showcase comes out on HBO Latino. It goes up on HBO Max. They love Ida, but internally people are saying, who was the guy? Who's this Orlando label? And do you have more? Why don't we try to make his longer? And Edwin Licona said, you guys only granted him 5 minutes. I gave him 5 minutes. That's all that we have on Orlando. Oh. And then he goes, why don't we do a half hour with Orlando? Because he saw the excitement that they had for me. And they were like, let's do it. And they granted me a half hour. Yep. I shot it in Glendale, California. And everything went off without a hitch. I said, I know exactly what I said yes to. I know what I agreed to. And Edwin Licona, with the Entrenos family, delivered on everything that they said they were going to deliver. And I delivered on what I said I was going to deliver. And it just worked out perfectly. Even my key art, the artwork that came out, the photographer, everything just panned out. It was one of those things where they say everything aligned. Michael mm-hmm. Cox came in, and Michael Cox, I'm saying his name and I'll repeat it again, Michael Cox. He's the comedy producer for The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
He heard about me taping my half hour. He had seen me already on the road doing comedy specials, and he gave me a shot in New York to Amazing. Audition for The Tonight Show with Jimmy wow. Fallon. I land the audition. It's beautiful because I also get the release date for my special. Michael Cox gives me like 2 weeks before my special is about to release. That's the date that gets slotted for me to perform on The Tonight Show.
Oh, and
it was
amazing.
Just like, it was just magic, like yeah. magic. Yeah. And then, oh man, Brian Baldinger, another producer, and I'm dropping names because I have to drop these names because I'm so grateful for these people.
Yeah.
And Conan O'Brien came up out of nowhere because Sebastian Maniscalco referred me, and they looked at my body of work, and next thing you know, Conan O'Brien labels me top 10 comics like to watch from Team Coco.
Wow.
And so I also get invited to the New York Comedy Festival, which is a big deal
yeah.
for me. And but most importantly, all this stuff is happening back to back to back to back. Like, it was just like, oh wow, I couldn't have wrote it better. I
right.
couldn't have yeah. envisioned it better. The only thing I ever envisioned was like, I want to have a special one day. That's all that my goal was. And then all Amazing. These other things came.
So yes. serendipitous, and just like, that's so cool that all, I mean,
yes.
pulled it out that way.
I think it's important more than anything. It's just like, even if someone gives you 5 minutes, put yourself out there. Like, just take the opportunity, because you never know what's going to come of it. Even if you're like, I'll just do it because, you know, I want to just, you know, I'll just try. It's good for me to put myself out there. You know, who knows if anything will come of it? Like, just do it, because you don't yeah. know.
You shouldn't hold back yeah. on anything that is a genuine opportunity for you. I've had this yeah. discussion with other comics where they're like, I've done other shows and the pay hasn't been that much, but it's an opportunity. And the thing is that I always look at all these things, the half hours, the True TV appearances, the Tonight Show appearances. I always look at them like commercials. What do I really like to do?
Mm-hmm.
I really like to perform in front of people. Where does that take place? In comedy clubs. How do comedy clubs book you? Well, you have some sort of a name that they believe that you're going to put butts in chairs. Because that's what they worry about, selling their chicken tenders and liquor. And my job is to do commercials for what I love to do. And that's what those things are. They're my commercials. And mm-hmm. That's how I look at them. And I appreciate everybody who's granted me the opportunity to do a commercial for my services.
Yeah.
And I put myself out there. And I've had comics, again, because the pay isn't that much, that they're like, I had a conversation where a comic told me, I don't want to do that show because they're only paying so much. Yeah, it's airing on that network, but they're only paying so much. But then I'm going to burn those 10 minutes, those 15 minutes. And I'm saving those, and I'm saving that for my hour. And then I remember saying, oh, congratulations, man, you have an hour? When are you going to shoot it? And then they were like, no, I don't have it yet. But when I have it, I want to make sure that I have those 15 minutes. And then I was just like, I know it sounds morbid, but yo, you could drop dead walking out of this club right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the opportunities yeah. that, you know, Phil Palisol, Denver, Colorado, Phil Palisol told me, OG comic. He tells me, in this business that we are, all of us, you guys and myself, and whatever you're doing in life, you're going to get opportunities, but you're always going to have to reach for them. you're always going to have to reach for them. They're going to get dropped close. It's very, very randomly will something land in the palm of your hand. But they will land real right there at the tip of your fingers, and you still have to reach for it. You still have to reach for it. And this is everything from myself all the way up to, you know, Julia Roberts. She's going to get an offer. She still has to reach for it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So the same thing for you guys. You're doing the podcast. You're getting the right advertisers. You know, you're still going to have... That's the reach. The reach is reading these ads.
Yeah.
I think you're taking breaks for.
I think we mention this all the time.
Are
on
we
the
sounding
show.
Too much like NPR? I feel like we
No.
I'm in an NPR vibe, though.
I mean, you have a way with words. You're a great storyteller. We say this all the time on the show. Like, usually, if you have immigrant parents, it's like instilled in you that you have like this ridiculous work ethic. You know, like as you said earlier, like you put your head down, you got to work even before you pursued comedy. You were a really hard worker.
Yeah.
And I think that work ethic is instilled in us by seeing our parents and seeing what they like. Even they don't have to tell us anything. We just like subconsciously absorb it. We're sponges and it ripples out in everything we do. And yeah, I think I see an element of that in your path and your journey. It might seem morbid to be like, what if you die tomorrow? But really, like, what if? Like, you just have to like really grab anything while you can and just go for it. I think it's great advice.
100%. And watch out for the self-sabotaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all do it. Like,
it's something I'm working on. Let's just
what's
say.
Your
it's,
worst one? What's your, what, like, what's your, Shireen, what is the worst?
I talk myself out of everything. I get really scared of thinking like, even if I do X, Y, or Z, I'm going to be mediocre at it. And mediocrity is my ultimate fear. I don't want to be mediocre. And sometimes I get so scared even attempting to do something because I'm like, well, I'm not an expert at it. It's going to be mediocre. And not realizing, but talking myself out of the fact that you have to keep doing something to make a dent in this thing that you want to achieve. And I know I'm being vague, but like, for example, like if I've been trying to write the same feature film, the same pilot also for years, like two separate projects that have been taking me a long time.
Because
every time I make progress on it, I second guess myself, I get scared. I either abandon it or trash it. And you just have to face that fear and realize you're self-sabotaging yourself because
have you gotten
afraid.
Through all three acts already?
For my feature, no. I got close, but no. But now, for example, I'm like remedying the self-sabotagingness because now I've signed up. I don't know why I'm sharing this, but I'm taking a screenplay class for the first time in my whole life. I've never taken anything like this, but it's something that's 10 weeks. It's going to hold me accountable. I have homework.
Yes.
I have all this stuff. And it's not just me that's being let down now. It's a teacher. It's a classmate. So I think that's helping me because if I'm just letting myself down, self-sabotaging is easy. It is so easy to self-sabotage when you're the only one.
Well, and also I want to point, sorry to interrupt, but it's very important that I jump in on this because this isn't from me. This is from a great actor by the name of Denzel Washington. By signing up for this class, you're doing the work.
But you don't understand. I was even in my... So you sign up and you wait for a slot. When I was offered the slot, I was doing hurdles in my mind being like, I can't do this. No, 10 weeks? Like, my birthday is in 10... Like what if I want to go camping? I kept talking myself out of like, well, what if I miss a class? What if this? And then I realized like, you're making this commitment. You're going to get over whatever these excuses are because it doesn't serve you.
How about
and
you,
you
Anna?
Is
there anything with you, Anna, that you like? What's your self sabotage?
I don't really self sabotage anymore. I almost say I feel like I've gotten a little cocky in how I take my work now. Like I've been asked. I'm not going to talk about it on here because it's not too out there. But you know, I've taken up an opportunity that's so out of my comfort zone and is truly like, I'll tell you guys off air, but it's like it came out of nowhere, this opportunity. It's a complete change in what I would ever do, but I'm going to just do it because they offered it to me. And I'm like, well, it's flattering that you offered it to me. I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but I'm going to put myself out there and see if it does. Like, just because I was like, fuck it. If they're offering it to me, I might as well take that as a sign that I actually do have, like, they think I'm capable. So I might as well just do it. And I'm just starting to think about everything like that. Like, every opportunity I'm given, I'm like, fuck it. Let's just do it and see where it goes.
I love that. I love that. And once again, just tagging the advice from Phil Pelosol, even though it was offered to you, you still had to reach for it and accept it. And accept that you were, you know, that you were like, fuck it. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. Myself personally, a great example is like, we're all, like, I auditioned for shows, for TV shows, movies and whatnot. And I'm doing everything from the house now. And like, I have to read these lines, but I rather pick up the vacuum and vacuum the thing. And it's like, do everything possible that has nothing to do with what I'm supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
And then do it. But then, and then like, okay, all right. Oh man, I got like 3 hours left. Then, so I'm still, you know, it's a work in progress, this life that we all live. It's a work in progress. I'm just now starting. I received it on a Monday and it says self-tape and it's due on Friday. I no longer, you don't have to wait till Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now I'm like, now it's become like, oh, less. Yeah, I'm going to get it in by Wednesday. I'm going to, you know, so.
Yeah, why not? I mean,
but I self-sabotage. I still do it.
I mean, the whole point of this life is self-improvement, I think. And not the whole point, but a big part of it for me is just working on yourself in ways that benefit you, that make you happier, that even like this bring you closer to a state of happiness that's more often than not kind of thing. And I think I totally relate to that. I do every possible thing I can other than the thing I'm supposed to do. I'll do laundry. I'll vacuum for the first time ever because I'm just like, now's the time I need to do the dishes. Now is the time I need to do this instead of write, you know? So I totally relate. I think your wisdom kind of like it permeates through this podcast. And I'm really glad we got to talk to you about your special and your life. You've worked really hard to get where you are, and you deserve all the success that you have and so much more. And I'm excited to see more.
I'm glad your people reached out to have you on the show.
Oh man, please, we don't even need to, we're past having people's. Please reach out to me. I'd love to be on here any day or any other topics that you guys want to talk about.
Yeah, you're gonna have to. I love it.
This was a legit NPR episode.
It really.
Gave NPR.
Yeah, okay. That's what we like to do. We like to give NPR energy.
We're gonna talk about berries today. It's berry season.
I had delicious berries this morning. Let me tell you, organic blueberries and blackberries.
Fantastic. Oh. Yes, there's a nice couple in Echo Park that they grow their own berries. And I've never reached out to them. They offered that, like, hey, we'll give you, we ripped out the soil and put new soil and they're organic. And berries are great for your brain. I love berries.
They're great for your brain, good antioxidants. Yeah. They're delicious.
Yeah. I would have said that word, but I can't say the A word that you said. I can't pronounce it. I'll probably give myself a stroke.
That's funny. There are so many words like that for me too. I still get caught up trying to say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and all in a straight. When I was younger, I couldn't say them all. Even and
you
I loved them.
Couldn't sing the song, so you were depressed.
I can't say it. I have like a low key. I had like I just stutter sometimes, and whatever. But
Teenage Mutant.
But I have
Ninja
so many
Turtles.
Words like antioxidant for you is what I'm trying to say.
Antioxidant.
Yeah, that word right there, that'll definitely go on the board. There's a story that in Everybody Loves Raymond, there was one of the whiteboards in the writer's room was words that Ray Romano cannot say. So for the writers to know.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, if I ever end up in that situation, I definitely, boy, they're going to have a bunch of words. Yeah. You know? And the thing is that if you write it in, I'm still going to try to say it. Yeah. But that's on you. That's on you. That's not on me if I pronounce it wrong. I'm still going to go for it.
This has been lovely. And you are going to have to come back and talk to us some more for another NPR-esque episode. But until
NPR
then.
NPR adjacent. Yes, that's what NPR we're going to call this episode. Let's call this episode NPR adjacent.
Yeah. That is, I know. We're like, what's her name? Terry Gross interviewers. The Middle Eastern Terry Gross.
Oh, no.
It's okay. She is the whitest woman on earth, but it's okay.
Yeah, she is. But so everybody, please watch Adorable on HBO Max and tell everyone where they can follow you.
Before I say that, I got to ask you guys, my only vice is eating. So you guys, are you both from Middle Eastern descent?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's your favorite Middle Eastern restaurant that I can visit?
Are you in LA?
Are you in LA?
Yes. I will just say whatever town because I don't like people to know where any of us live.
Okay.
I'm very spyish like that.
I would say my favorite Iranian food, there's two, Rafi's and then Flame.
Flame and Rafi's.
Yes.
Okay.
I recommend those. Very good.
Okay.
It is in SoCal. There are a couple. There's a really good Syrian, Lebanese restaurant. No, it is 100% Syrian. Sorry. The name is Mal El Sham. Sham means Damascus in Arabic, essentially. It's like what they call Damascus. And it's M-A-L space A-L space S-H-A-M. Mal El Sham.
El Sham.
It's delicious. I love it so much. And there's another one that might be closer to where you're at. It's called Marouche,
I think. Yeah, I think I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, Marouche is great.
Mm-hmm.
But those are pretty good. I mean, but nothing beats my mom's cooking. You know, like every time someone asks me that, like I just think like, I just want to eat my mom's food. But those are examples, especially Mal El Sham. That's an example of like Syrian food. It is so good.
Yes.
And really makes me miss Syria, but in a good way.
Yeah. Well, I don't have, there's not really a Dominican restaurant. There is one in San Diego called Tropical. Mm. But something that's a good transition into, there's a restaurant, it's Peruvian. It's called Mamitas.
Okay.
Great.
I like Peruvian food.
If you eat red meat, ask for the lomo.
Okay.
Lomo. And that's
what if I don't eat meat?
If you don't eat meat, they have other selections. Just look in the menu. But it's I'm telling you, it's just
Mamitas?
Great. Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna look that up.
Mamitas. Let me see. A clue of the city that it's in. you will definitely find people from the country that half of the creation of the Kardashian is from.
Okay.
I think I know.
That's good. That's a good clue. Also, okay. I did forget to say, I don't mind knowing the location of this, but Anaheim, there's basically like a little Arabia district that has delicious food. Forn El Hara is a really good like bakery over there, but Little Arabia is trying to get it like get itself getting nationally or like at least like state like just known as an actual neighborhood because there are so many Arabs there. I was born in Anaheim and I grew up there for a little bit, but yeah, I would recommend if you want some really good Middle Eastern food and you're in SoCal, Little Arabia is the place to be in Anaheim.
But nice. I love it. I'm in all the way.
But yeah, tell the listeners, plug your stuff.
Oh, back to that. If you would like to follow me and you thought that my voice was smooth and soothing, please go to my Instagram. All social media is at HeyLando, HeyLando. My website is HeyLando.com. That's where I put up my tour dates.
Nice.
I also do a Wednesday live on Facebook and YouTube with my good friend Eric Rivera, and it's called Entre Nos. If you follow me on Facebook, if you follow me on YouTube or Instagram. You will see the post. I will post the link. You can follow me. My album, Adorable. This is how I get to buy dog food for my doggy. Everybody is streaming on all streaming services, Spotify, Pandora, Apple Music, Napster is still out there. It's actually a streaming service now. It's called Adorable. And it's also on HBO Max. Adorable is my comedy special. Wow. That's the first time ever in the history of ever that I've been that professional.
Wow.
That was amazing. That was perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really happy to have you.
Thank you for having me. This has been good. I feel like I feel my spirit feels good. My spirit feels good.
That's the least we could ask.
Oh, thank you.
But I'm going to wrap us out. Y'all ready? Okay. It's Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen, it's Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hussey on Twitter, so follow me.
Yeah, and until next time, watch Adorable.
Yeah, watch Adorable. Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.